This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For teenagers, driving is a lot more than transportation. Getting a driver's license is a rite of passage, and a car is both a kind of rolling apartment and a ticket to adventure, a place where they can be alone and in charge. It's also dangerous. In fact, it's the most dangerous place teens can be. A study released by the National Center for Statistics and Analysis cites car crashes as the leading cause of death for teens in both 2001 and 2002. Today we'll look at why, what's being done to reduce the risk, including the graduated license programs many states now use, where driving privileges are phased in over time, and at more traditional driver's education. Later in the program, a report that Egypt has a secret nuclear weapons program, and why relief pitchers get no respect in Cooperstown. But first, teenage drivers and safety. If you're a teenage driver or the parent of one, call and tell us what works and what's fair. If you're a former teenage driver, did you do things then you wouldn't dare do now? We'd also like to hear from instructors and cops. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Washington Post reporter Elizabeth Williamson joins us here in Studio 3A. She's looked into these issues after teenage drivers were involved in a series of accidents in and around this city. 17 people have been killed just over the past couple of months. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
One of the risks you write about in your series of articles in the Post, parents think that kids will be safer in a big car, an SUV. Not true, necessarily.
No, it's not. I mean, given the number of choices out there, this is probably one of the least safe vehicles, according to the studies and the reporting that I had done, for a teenager to be traveling in.
How come?
Because the loss of control, SUVs are particularly prone to rollovers, which while they account for only about 3% of crashes in the nation, they account for about one-third of deaths. One of the biggest causes for a rollover is loss of driver control, and that is one of the biggest causes of teen crashes as well.
Mm-hmm. And teen drivers, whatever they're driving, tend to drive too fast to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, the three biggest federal studies have shown that the three biggest causes of teen fatalities in a car are alcohol, loss of control, and high speed.
Mm-hmm. As you tell an awful story, I mean, it's a great article, but an awful story, mm-hmm. of a parent who said, my little girl, it was just too much car for her.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a young woman who, going into a curve, had a lot going against her. I mean, she had been drinking, she was speeding, it was late at night, and it was a bad road. But she was also traveling in an SUV, and while, despite those factors, the crash researcher said that perhaps she could have regained control of the vehicle when she ran into that curve. Mm-hmm. She'd had her license only 3 weeks, so the chances of her being able to recover from a loss of control were nil.
And this was a lot of teens also tend to drive older SUVs. There are a lot more safety features in the newer ones.
Yes, that's right. A lot of them have been introduced in the last several years, and that tends to be newer than most teens are driving.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that parents often do to try to protect their children is to enroll them in a driver's education program. Now, different states, every state has a different requirement for driver's licenses. Maryland, one of the places you write about, requires children or anybody to take a driver's education program before being qualified for a driver's license. You question the value of these.
Yeah, it's really not me. It's the people that I spoke with and the information that that I was reading and the studies that have been done. And that's that in their current form, driver's education programs may even contribute to crash rates because in some states they allow a young driver to receive their license even younger.
Contribute to teenage deaths on the road.
Yes, in those, I mean, this is an extrapolation, but based on those states in which if you didn't take driver's ed, you would be a little bit older when you got onto the road. And when you consider that age and inexperience are one of the chief factors that young drivers have going against them, yes.
Don't people in driver's education programs get more experience? places like, you know, big highways, that sort of thing?
Precious little, actually. It's just a matter of maybe 12 hours behind the wheel, sometimes six, and six spent observing. It's not a lot of time. What the researchers are saying is that one of the key ways for a young driver to gain that experience is to spend more time behind the wheel with a parent in the car.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the idea of these driver's education programs is, well, you know, they're supposed to make kids safer, and really what we're hearing is they're teaching to the test, in this case, the driver's test.
Yeah. They're teaching what kids need to know to pass the test, but they're not necessarily getting them out on the road, which is the chief, the sort of key thing that they need in order to become better drivers.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. Again, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org, and we'll begin with Kathy. Kathy's calling from Athens, Ohio.
Yeah, hi. Two young women were killed in our community last winter due to drunk driving. And yet, after these tragic deaths, which really put our whole community through, of course, a lot of changes, our high school really did not use the tragedy as a learning experience for our young people. A lot of parents called and asking them to do forums and panel discussions, you know, on the topic of drinking and driving. While they did offer some counseling, it just didn't seem the high school really used it as an opportunity to really get more information to the young people.
Elizabeth Williamson, is that common, that people turn to the school to try to develop, at least get some good out of these disasters?
Yeah, I think that we've seen that also in the Washington area, that there have been a series of forums and panel discussions and sort of get-togethers, if you will, on this issue, and people talk about it, and it helps to discuss it. But as one parent put it, sitting in one of those forums that I covered, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, these are the parents who are sitting down with their kids, who are logging the required number of hours, and then some, the ones who are behind the wheel with their kids. What you really need to do is to get to the vast majority of parents and have them work with kids and make sure that they're in the car and that they don't just use the you know, granting of a driver's license as a way not to chauffeur the kids around, or you know, that this is a sort of ticket to independence, not only for the child, but for the parent as well.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, what's developed there in Athens? Has anything followed on from these deaths?
Really not much really happened out at the high school. Again, like I said, some counseling, but it just seems like so many things, you need to repeat it over and over again. And while many parents repeat it at home, it just didn't seem that the high school was really doing as much as they could have done to offer more professional services to the young people.
Kathy, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And one of the things that you report in your stories, Elizabeth, is that, in fact, driving with parents is far more beneficial than driving with instructors.
Yeah, that's true, Neil. I think I this is just anecdotal, but I think that, you know, it's the sort of act that mom or dad is watching rather than the instructor, because a lot of times the schools, I mean, just again, anecdotal, but in speaking with kids who had gone through driver's ed, there were a lot of, you know, difficulties with the schools themselves. Sometimes the instructors weren't very serious either.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kids were watching, of course, they would realize that mom or dad had their hands over their eyes and weren't watching during that period.
Yeah, it's not easy to sit there.
It's not easy to do that. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Susan Ferguson joins us now. She's Senior Vice President of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. She's also here with us in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
I'm glad to be here, Neil.
And I wanted to ask you about the scale of this problem. Teenagers, I've read, make up about 7% of the total driving population and account for 14% of all fatalities.
Well, when you look at their crash rates per mile driven, you see that teenagers have higher crash rates than others. But looking particularly at 16-year-olds, the youngest drivers, they have fatal crash rates per mile driven at least three times higher than other teenagers. So these beginning drivers are really the ones who are at the very highest risk.
Do we know why that is, that they're the most inexperienced or the youngest?
Well, as Elizabeth just mentioned earlier, they are immature and they're inexperienced, and these factors lead to more risky driving, I guess a lack of evaluation of hazards and not an ability to respond to them when they happen. So here you have a driver who typically will drive beyond the conditions And then if anything happens, you know, out of the ordinary, then they just don't know how to respond. Mm. When you add in, you know, passengers in the vehicle, particularly their teen friends, that can increase the risk. You know, if you look at one, the driver alone, versus two or more passengers, you have risks that are 3 to 5 times higher.
And the social aspect of being able to drive is a big deal for teenagers.
Absolutely. And I think it's not just a distraction factor, but sometimes their teen peers egg them on to do things that sometimes they wouldn't otherwise have done.
Here's an email we got from Bev Bafus. Our teenagers are good drivers, but we've had 4 cars totaled in the last 5 years. Thank goodness no one was injured. All accidents were weather-related. Driver's ed programs need to focus more on poor road conditions and should have more than 6 hours of behind-the-wheel time. Elizabeth, the driver's ed programs that you looked at, did they focus at all on bad driving conditions, rain, snow, ice?
There are these so-called high-performance driving schools that focus on what to do in an emergency situation, including a bad situation on the roadway itself. But what's interesting is that 86% of Americans, according to the study that was done several years ago, believe that driver's ed is very important in keeping their children safe. And in actual fact, there's just no getting around that time spent on the road with a parent in the passenger seat.
And driver's ed is a requirement in schools is going down. I mean, 20 years ago, I think 90% of the people took driver's ed. Lately, it's a much lower number. Isn't that right, Susan?
Well, it is. But the reason for that is that studies here and around the world have shown that while it might be a useful way to teach basic driving skills, it really does nothing to improve safety. Because what you're looking at here is not necessarily just experience. You're looking at drivers who make bad judgments. Teenagers are notorious for not having great judgment skills, and put that together with the inexperience, and you really do have a lethal mix.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Williamson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Neil.
Elizabeth Williamson, a Metro reporter with the Washington Post, and she was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. We're going to continue our conversation with Susan Ferguson of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety after we return from a short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the leading cause of death for teenagers, car accidents. Our guest is Susan Ferguson, Senior Vice President at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. And, of course, you're invited to join the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And before the break, we were talking about the ineffectiveness, of driver's education programs. What about the graduated licensing programs that so many states are using now, where driving privileges are phased in to probationary drivers, and then even after they get their full license?
Well, I think, you know, knowing what we know, that drivers, particularly young drivers, are very hard to change their behavior. The approach with graduated licensing is not to say, okay, we're going to change fundamentally the way you drive, but what it does is it changes the conditions under which they drive. So as you said, what they do is they lengthen the learner's permit period. You know, prior to 1995, many states had no learner's permit requirement at all, and those that did had very little time mandated. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure you get the experience. And once you get that license, and you drive unsupervised, which it turns out is the most dangerous time of all, let's make sure that you don't drive under the most hazardous conditions, such as driving at night, mm-hmm. and driving with passengers. So what we're doing really is gradually introducing you to the more hazardous experiences, and hopefully as you gain experience and obviously get older and are more mature, ultimately you will be allowed to drive anywhere, anytime, with whomever you want. And that program now is, components of it are in about 47 states, although you know, they vary in the strength of those programs and have been shown to be very effective, anywhere from 10% to 30% reductions in crashes or injury crashes. So graduated licensing has been effective, but it's by no means a panacea.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email we got from Chris in Portland, Oregon. Part of the problem I've noticed on the road is as a whole sensory overload, multitasking while driving, cell phones, sound systems, other teens in the car. Parents want their children to drive newer, safer cars, but often those are the vehicles loaded with options that distract from the job at hand.
Well, certainly distraction is a problem for all drivers, but we do feel that it's particularly a problem for young drivers who haven't learned to manage all the different cues in the environment and the various hazardous situations. But I still feel that newer vehicles, because of the additional safety equipment, if they've got, you know, many of the airbags now that we would recommend and stability control systems would be the safer way to go. And I think parents probably could be discerning in the kinds of other options that they buy on the vehicles.
And, of course, teenagers are the most likely not to wear seatbelts as well.
That is another issue, yes. And it's something that, you know, we need to address, not only teenage drivers, but even more so their passengers. And as you add more passengers in, the belt use rates go even lower. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you know, when it comes to things like drinking and driving or belt use, what we really need is more enforcement. We need the police to be out there making sure that people obey the law.
Is there any division on these graduated licensing programs between urban and rural areas? Obviously, great distances. If you're working in Nebraska, it's a long haul almost anywhere.
Right. And there was some concern, I know, in legislatures when the laws were passed that people in rural areas might be disadvantaged by this law. But in fact, in practice, we found that these laws work well, both in urban and rural areas, and are equally effective in those areas. And in fact, when you talk to parents who've experienced the laws, you don't find that they generally are inconvenienced by them. So I don't think you need to make a distinction, and I think it's important, you know, in both urban and rural areas to have laws of this kind.
Teenage drivers obviously have less experience than their adult counterparts, but they're also working with different wiring. Dr. Jay Geed is the chief of brain imaging with the National Institute of Mental Health, and we've reached him at his office in Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Geed, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to begin, actually, by reading an email we got from a man named Warren. He's 42 years old, grew up in southwestern Michigan, where there's always plenty of open space on the highways. As a teenager, I would drive as fast as my 74 Firebird would take me. My buddies and I graduated, the buddies I graduated with would race whenever we had the opportunity. Now at 42, living in San Francisco, I would never dream of driving much more than the speed limit, whether I'm visiting another state or driving in the Bay Area. And I have a 17-year-old son, and I'm paranoid about the things that he may try for excitement. Does he write with good reason?
Yes. I think basically the message from the brain imaging studies is that brain development is going on a lot longer than we used to think. And the part of the brain involved in controlling impulses and decision-making, the prefrontal cortex, is particularly late to mature and doesn't reach adult levels until about age 25. And this leads to a great paradox of adolescence, because at no other time in life are people more at their physical peak. And yet the teen years are a time of substantial morbidity and mortality, and almost all the health risks relate to emotions and decision-making, namely suicide and accidents. But compared to 42-year-old Warren, his 17-year-old is stronger, faster, has better vision, balance, quicker reflexes. Physically, his son should be a better driver. But in fact, as the insurance industry clearly shows, as a group, they are not. And 2% of the teens accounting for 8% of the accidents. And so this is puzzling in terms of how physically teens should be better drivers. But because I think partly due to brain maturation, decision-making, controlling impulses, that's not the case. The trouble is, with these kind of statistics, is that there are so many exceptions to the rule. Many, many teens are excellent drivers and consistently make good decisions, and many adults never become good drivers or develop good judgment no matter how old they get. But as groups, we do see this pattern that Warren has mentioned in terms of 40-year-olds have different attitudes and different outlooks regarding risk assessment than 17-year-olds.
So it is not simply that they are inexperienced drivers. Somebody who had never driven and started at the age of 25 would be a better driver than somebody at the age of 16.
I think we used to
think, on statistical average, again.
Yeah, we used to think that, and I think what rental car agencies needing to be age 25 to rent cars really addresses that question well, because even 22, 23, and 24-year-olds have more accidents than Warren would at 42. And by that age, there's a substantial amount of practice driving. So I don't think it's strictly related to driving experience. That's a part of it. But I think that this goes above and beyond just the amount of practice one has had behind the wheel.
How does having passengers around affect? I mean, we know it has a bad effect statistically on teens when they're driving. Do you have any wisdom to insight to offer on that?
Well, some of the driving simulating studies, which are much safer, of course, to do, have a very intriguing finding that compared to 10, 11, and 12-year-olds and adults, teens are particularly sensitive to whether they're with peers or not. And what happens is that when they're alone doing these driving simulators, they actually can drive quite safely and compare very well to the adults. But when they're with peers, same-age friends, they take many more risks and are affected much more than the younger children or the adults. So it seems like the teens are particularly sensitive to the peer presence itself, but also to distractibility. I think has been mentioned, CDs playing, other people in the car, and that early drivers should be particularly diligent about diminishing the distractions. And I think that a lot of good legislation and ideas have already been put forward to this end.
Let's get another caller on the line, and Ashley is with us from San Francisco.
Hi, I'm calling, and this is very apropos to what my question is. If rental cars won't rent to anybody under 25, but they assume that you've already been driving since 16 or 17, what do you do about a child who's about to be 18 and who doesn't really have any interest in driving? Does he need those years of practice to become a good adult driver?
Let's ask Susan Ferguson.
Well, I don't think I'd be concerned about that. Frankly, the fact that he's waiting before he drives is great news for you. And I think that, generally speaking, it's not... Years of experience are important at any age, but the drop-off is much bigger among 16-year-olds than it is among older people. In other words, the effect of maturity tends to be bigger for the younger than it is for the older kids. So I don't think I would be concerned. I think that if this child were to learn to drive at 25, they probably would be much safer drivers than if they were to learn to drive at 16.
And obviously living in San Francisco, which has a fine mass transit system, has other options as well, Ashley.
Oh, yeah. We have a $10 a month fast pass, and you can go anywhere on a bus or you know, a train. So we love it. No, I'm not complaining. I'm just thinking, is it like riding a bike or some other physical skill that takes years of practice to really become good at honing your reaction time?
Dr. Geed, what do you think?
Yeah, at least on the driving simulators, there's a point of diminishing return that's reached rather quickly in terms of the practice effect. It certainly does help to have hours of driving under your belt. But that these other factors, I think, in terms of impulse control, self-regulation, are important as well. And I would agree with Susan in terms of I would feel that by the time he's 25, starting at 18 would not make him any less of a safe driver than if he had started at age 16.
Ashley, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Tom, and Tom's calling from Louisville, Wyoming.
Lovell,
excuse me.
No, I'm just amazed that so many children don't have the opportunity, with their parents, of course, to get that experience.
What was your experience, Tom?
Well, when I was about 12, 13, I would actually take the car and drive it around the block and get very familiar with it. My father had a beautiful Mercedes convertible, and he taught me, I think I was 11 years old, to drive that car.
Well, let me ask Dr. Geed, is it if children get experience of 8, 9, 10, 11, does that make them better drivers, do you think?
Well, we have a different...
I was asking Dr. Geed that question, Tom.
I think that this is one of where the risks would outweigh the benefits in terms of and probably a good reason for things like driving simulators where people can get some practice without putting other people in harm's way. But I think that depending on this might be sort of a rural city comparison as well. If there is lots of wide open spaces and very little things to run into or people to run into. But still, you may become a better driver, but I think that the cost of achieving that is great in terms of it only takes one moment of lapse to endanger the driver's life and, unfortunately, the lives of other people on the road.
Let me ask you one question before we let you go, Dr. Gee. Do you think teenagers should be driving?
Great question, and I'm going to hedge a bit and say some. And maybe even most. And I think that that's the great challenge because it'd be very easy to say, well, if we want the roads as safe as possible, everyone should wait till age 25. But there are certain drawbacks to that. I think that the goal should be to find which of the teens will be able to drive safely and responsibly. And I think that the current system doesn't do that optimally. And would certainly agree with what I heard earlier about the graduated licensing and increasing levels of privilege based on proven performance. That seems like a very sound system to me. But I think that it would be extreme to say teenagers flat out should not be driving because many and probably most drive as well as adults.
Dr. Geed, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jay Geed, Chief of Brain Imaging at the National Institute for Mental Health, and he joined us by phone from his office in Bethesda, Maryland. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Susan Ferguson, here's another email. This is from Jessica Depp at Ohio Wesleyan University. My parents required me to drive 6,000 miles with them before I could apply for my license. I grew up in Ohio. We started the lessons in the fall so I could experience the full range of road and weather conditions. I vividly remember my father screaming, the clutch, on one of my very first lessons. It was great bonding and learning experience. Even after I received my license, I was limited for the next 6 months to where and when I could drive. Well, those are unusual parents.
And smart parents, I might add. Certainly, we believe that the more experience that you get, the better, under a lot of different conditions. And that's important, daytime, nighttime, different weather conditions, different roadways. But I think the key really is when they first drive on their own, which is when those crash rates really peak, to have those kinds of restrictions in place. And sometimes, if your state either doesn't have them or they're not very strong restrictions, parents should consider having restrictions of their own and sticking to them.
Are there good ways or better ways for parents to consider, reacting to their children when they're driving as opposed to screaming, the clutch, the clutch?
Well, we hear that children get very upset, teens get very upset when their parents do that. And I think obviously you want somebody calm who's in the vehicle next to you. But certainly as a parent who's been in a vehicle with a teen, sometimes that's just a little difficult when they're in some impending dangerous situation. So yes, preferably, but that's not always possible to achieve.
Let's see if we could get one more caller in. Eric is with us from St. Paul.
Hi. In St. Paul, we have very extensive classroom and behind-the-wheel training. And for behind-the-wheel, they gear at training you for the difficult situations, rush hour, traffic, highway, and they put you in the hot spots, having to merge real quickly. And it's up to your parents to teach you the everyday stuff. And my instructor stressed that nothing was more important than experience. And whether you're 16, 18, 25, if you've never been behind the wheel of a car, you're going to drive the same.
I understand they have snow and ice from time to time there in St. Paul.
Yes, we have quite a bit, and me and quite a lot of people think you should have to get a winter driving endorsement on the back of your license to be behind the wheel during 9 months out of the year.
Is that among some of the good ideas that you're hearing coming down the pike, Susan?
Well, people are looking at revisiting and remodeling driver education, if you like. And the kinds of things they're looking at are things like advanced driver education. But there, as Elizabeth mentioned earlier, you know, in countries such as Norway and Sweden, where icy conditions are fairly much the norm, when they trained younger drivers, particularly male drivers, to handle themselves under icy conditions on a skid pan, that actually increased their crash risk.
Ah, they became more adventurous, thinking they knew what to do.
Indeed they did. And so the result of that was that rather than train them how to drive in those conditions, what they did was try to get them to have some perception that these are dangerous conditions and you need to be more careful. Hmm. So you have to be careful how you introduce advanced driver education, and plus other people are looking at improving hazard perception. The idea is that, you know, the first stage of driver ed will improve basic skills and not do much else, but perhaps we need a second stage when you're more receptive, more experienced, to really bring you along in terms of hazard perception and how to deal with those hazards.
Eric, thanks for the call. Safe driving.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Bye-bye. And Susan Ferguson, thank you very much for being with us today. Susan Ferguson is Senior Vice President at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety and was kind enough to come into Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, does Egypt have a secret nuclear weapons program? I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.